You're listening to World Watchers International over FM 102 KLRB, and now here's May with part two.
Okay, we'll get back to some of these very serious matters, and they have to do with Antarctica and Falklands and what's going on in Argentina and South America, and to American citizens, particularly how our government is covering up and is collusion with those people with experiments and murder and mass murder of American citizens. I called Joe Holzinger's office. He was the aide to Leo Ryan, the member of Congress who was killed in Guyana. Within days of the murders down in Guyana, went to the office, made some tape recordings there with the secretary, and later Joe Holzinger came to my home, and I was the first person, I believe, in the United States to call attention to those name tags on those people. The minute I got Time Magazine and Newsweek Magazine, and you can get those Jonestown issues and look at your library, December the 4th, 1978, and I have the page numbers for Newsweek, but Time Magazine, if you find the same date, it's in your library. You'll see them there on the cover of the magazine, where there are people lying on the magazine. On the right leg of a girl in green pants, there is a leg tag. On the arm of a fifth body, you see an arm tag. On the back of the pants, somebody is labeled with a marker on the back. This is on the cover. On page 41, there's a left leg next to that cyanide vat with a marker, a tag. Now, keep in mind, no person had gotten into the compound. Time and Newsweek came and swooped down and took photographs. The people who had been there to murder them, inject them, shoot them, pile them, and to leave over 100 assassins could do the job and are still missing. Some of them went to the Barbados. They probably stayed with Claudette Colbert, where Ronald Reagan was a few weeks ago. Goodness knows what they were doing. These people are out loose at the present time. But look at those bodies that were left, that weren't covered over, and you see the left arm of a woman next to a bucket on page 41. On page 43, there's the left leg of a person, and on the right, they have an orange shirt on. You'll see a tag. And the left arm, there's a seventh body up. It's covered with a blue blanket. There's a tag. And the left arm of another person at the back edge of the picture, the pink blanket. I got a letter. I'd mentioned those tags on this program immediately and talked about Jonestown. I called KGO and tried to get that point across. And I got a letter from a fellow serving time in prison. And he wrote to me and he said, "Dear May, I happened to catch you on Bob Trevor's show on KGO and enjoyed it immensely, particularly interested in Jim Jones and the CIA connections and the involvement in mind control. I was a prisoner in Vacaville and recall a questionable project dealing with giving people electroshock and wearing strange plastic wrist tags with either paper or liquid inside, which changed colors." He said, "I'm in a federal prison right now." He said, "I have a good friend of mine, a professional soldier of fortune, a mercenary who gave me information about South America, Belize, that was under British control at the time, until this year, Guyana, Honduras. He works with an influential group of California businessmen with multinational interests, and he was interested in automatic weapons and so forth, and there's a lot of activity of the CIA going down there." He wrote this to me from a prison in California. Now, the implications of sending people to these islands, to using these airports, to tying people behind their backs, to dragging them, to using commercial airlines and using the Army as a politicized venture goes so far that you remember the time when it was several, 1978, December 1978, on this program, way back, number 368, I talked about smuggling witnesses into Guyana. The House Select Committee on Assassinations was investigating the case of Martin Luther King, and Mark Lane was sitting at the table at the time, representing a woman, Grace Stevens, who was a witness in the rooming house where James Earl Ray was supposed to have stayed. He stayed there, and she claimed that it wasn't the same person that left there that had shot Martin Luther King, and she had information on that, and they put her immediately into a mental hospital. And when the investigation came out a few years, many years later, the investigation began. Mark Lane checked her out. They gave her to Mark Lane as a ward from Tennessee, to Mark Lane, the attorney, and he brought to Orange County, California. And then there was a memo discovered by Nicholas Horrock. He wrote about it in the New York Times, December 8th, 1978, A memorandum was found in the file of Jim Jones saying, Jim, I got a message here. You wanted me to tell Mark Lane he should look into alternative means of getting Grace Walden to Guyana because the CIA might try to stop her from entering the country. Mark should try to get her another passport. And he refers to a woman who died, Maxine Sweeney, who was killed in a Jonestown encounter, a car accident. And they were going to give her, Grace Walden, the passport of Maxine Sweeney. And the letter from Jim Jones says, the drawback of this would be, of course, if a traitor were to look at the immigration list, we would be caught in a minute. The good point of this would be we wouldn't run the risk of getting caught by a passport off on the white market. That means trading passports. So the idea of having all those passports down there photographed in Time and Newsweek and destroying the people and not having any identity of who they were, most of them, was because I know many of the people didn't match the names. And how many witnesses or persons were housed away in that area that were primary to cases in this country that could be experimented on, shipped off? And if this happens, where does it stop? How far does it go? And as I say, the new deputy director of the CIA is going to be a fellow who had to be a part of the entire CIA Jonestown Jimmy Carter military operation. And Mr. Brzezinski, who was the national security advisor to Jimmy Carter, not Jones, the one who ordered the military to destroy the identification, Brzezinski was the gentleman who selected Pope John Paul II, along with Jimmy Carter, to become the Pope, the Polish Pope, who's currently in the Vatican, and that Pope worked for Solvay Chemical, which was IG Farben at Auschwitz. So exterminations, mass exterminations, do not offend this Pope very much. It was a very much part of his life. He went on to become a Pope. He was working for Solvay Chemical when all these murders, mass murders, were going on. And he was put into the Vatican by the influence of the Americans, Jimmy Carter and Brzezinski, on the people in Rome. He was put into the Vatican. And now Brzezinski, his counterpart, is allowing the cover-up, ordering the cover-up, and the politicization of the American army in a question of mass murder of American citizens. Now, if you think that you can sleep with this and it's never going to touch you, you are ready for one of those headbangers. Believe me, you're being held up by the heels, your head's between their legs, and you're ready to drop. And that's exactly what's happening. If we don't do something to stop this insanity and open up the Jonestown again, and the role of Brzezinski and the federal government, the military, and the CIA, we're all in deep trouble. And connected to the article I wrote on the airports and the medical control and the military control, combining like they did, say, with Jonestown or down in Antarctica with these secrecies, there was an article in the New York Times. This was Wednesday, April of 21st, 1982, sent to me by one of my favorite world watchers. I didn't see it in my edition. Electronic data gets an Army contract. This is the New York Times. The Army announced yesterday, this was this past week, it had awarded the electronic data systems, as against IBM that competed, a 10-year contract to instill and operate what will be the government's biggest data processing company. Now, this is going to be an organization called Viable, V-I-A-B-L-E, and it will connect every Army post in the United States, 42 Army posts. Now, the offices will be in Atlanta, Georgia, where so much of this counterintelligence and the Marshall Plan, the Garden Plot, and I give endless relationships of Atlanta, Georgia, and Jimmy Carter, and Reverend Moon, and Lockheed. There's a lot going on in Atlanta, Georgia. That's one of the bases. That's where the Germ Control Center is, in Atlanta, Georgia. The other's in Killeen, Texas. Another base is Monterey, California. Now, wouldn't you think that a corporation that gets this kind of a contract for $454 million to connect every Army base in the United States, this would be in our Monterey Herald? No, it comes out of the New York Times. If you live here in Monterey, you just don't happen to know it. And then the bottom line is the worst part. Electronic Data's chairman and majority stockholder, H. Ross Perot, has been in the spotlight for such actions as an unsuccessful effort to fly supplies to American prisoners in Vietnam. Ross Perot has been behind every kind of a counterintelligence operation from A to Z. But he's more than that. He is the computer system for Blue Cross for the hospital plans in the United States. Ross Perot links into the medical to those hospitals and the records that are in all the hospitals. So he has the information on health systems, on people who are sick, requests for Blue Cross. They are instrumental in major cities. Ross Perot is the medical computer system. So when you combine the medical computer system with the Army system, where you put in all the military bases into this huge operation viable that connects all the major military bases throughout the United States, multi-million-dollar, $450 computer, the Army Computer System Command, they said, was obsolete. So they will now employ 700 workers, and I would like to tell the people in Monterey that that is one of the things happening in our area. Maybe our local papers would be nice and tell us about it in a day or two. Let's see. And finally, on the subject of Antarctica, before I get to some other articles very quickly, a James Bernard McNally, 65 years old, died this week. None of us knew who he is, but the obituaries are getting more interesting all the time because people who had their fingers in very important bases and tentacles have died or are dying now, and the obituaries tell you more than we would ever know if they were alive. Now, the lead of the story is James Bernard McNally, 65, aided Admiral Byrd expedition to the South Pole. And this is April 17th, 1982, the Santa Fe Mercury. He was a soldier in World War II. He was in combat. He was in the Korean War. He went down to the Antarctic area in 1955-56 with Operation Deep Freeze. He helped with the icebreaker, the USS Edison, and they helped build bases with Admiral Byrd in the Navy's first expedition into the South Pole. The first expedition was the hot one, 1946-47, when World War I was over, right? And Admiral Byrd was complaining about the defenses and the Nazis in World War II. Okay, he was down there, and then he came back, and he was assigned to Moffett Field Air Force Base in 1959, where he did electronic maintenance on the F-105 fighter jets as stationed in the USS Lexington aircraft carrier. Now, in 1960, he retired from the Navy and worked as an engineer for Philco Ford in Palo Alto. Now, Philco Ford is the place around that exact time when Otto von Bolschwang, the number one Nazi in America, the head of Hitler's Galen operation, who arranged all the interconnections of the Nazis in this country back to Germany and down to Argentine, Otto von Bolschwang, the granddaddy of ideas behind Adolf Eichmann, living in Sunnyvale, working for Stanford Technology, worked for Philco Ford also when he was in Palo Alto. He was linked to John Paul Getty, and he also worked for Philco Ford. Now, later, James Bernard McNally worked for ISS Sperry Univac in Santa Clara, and then was a quality assurance engineer for the General Electric Kalmar Electric. With GE, he starred in television commercials, kind of like Ronald Reagan, I guess, that were featured nationwide. And he also worked for a communications system out of Palo Alto for the Iranian government. Now, Otto von Bolschwang and Frank Turpel and Edwin Wilson and the entire CIA operation that have their headquarters and their funding going down from Noonan Bank in Australia and into Iran with the Shah of Iran and the communications and their Swiss dummy front organizations and their Nazi tentacles to South America, the Odessa network link. They were set up that network satellite communications in Iran. So this fellow goes from World War II with Admiral Byrd's trip down to Antarctica, later down with the icebreaker in 55-56. He works for Philco Ford, which is the Otto von Bolschwang connections, the international connections, Iran with the Frank Turpel and Edwin Wilson connections, and Turpel also worked with von Bolschwang. That's how we hit upon this guy, how P. Carey found him, the San Jose Mercury, when I called him and said, check out Frank Turpel in California, and he came up with the name Otto von Bolschwang. And then he worked for television nationwide, and he also posed in advertisements for Fortune magazine, which were the Henry Luce connections. So that's quite an interesting bio on a guy who he spanned a lot of years. He touched all the bases, and he's 65 years old, and he died last week. Didn't say what he died of. Oh, cancer. Well, we'll give him, whether it's a Martha Mitchell cancer or Jack Ruby or what, or just a coincidental, but anyway, that was his demise, his obituary, and he covers these very important interlocking bases. Now, in the last 10, 14 minutes, I'll run down some very important articles in the news that I can't possibly detail, but I don't want you to lose sight of them. The first is a fantastic story that I'll have to do 15 or 20 minutes on next week. The lead article is Late Councilman Linked to Weapons Plot. It has to do with a Fred Maggiore, M-A-G-G-I-O-R-A, up in Oakland, California, who was 29 years on the city council, a conservative pushing law and order. Well, he died in 1979, just as Cardinal Cody died this weekend. Both of them were under investigations for huge frauds, and this fellow was under investigations for gun trafficking and connections to organized crime. Now, his links go to Meyer Lansky in Florida, Frank Sturgis, to Mitchell Werbel, who supplies these weapons for assassinations and coups. He worked with agent provocateurs, weapons suppliers, and attorneys in Florida. Meyer Lansky, he's got a who's who of Watergate, and it's an interesting article because not only does it go through Watergate and the major assassination teams that have been doing murders in this country, and prominently in the John Kennedy assassination, but then he also worked with a fellow that the FBI used later in the AB scam, the Sheik, was actually part of the operation that he was into, too, so that the AB scam Sheik that was used to get Senator Williams and other members of Congress out of office was connected to the Watergaters, and this is the first article I've seen connecting the AB scam to Watergate. There are many connections, but this is one that's very important. And Oakland is the area. I could see why when he was being investigated in 1969, this guy probably had to be offed by 1979, because Oakland is the area where Edwin Meese came from, who was working for Ronald Reagan at the time, where Lowell Jensen works from, who's the deputy in, DA in Washington, D.C., investigating, in quotes, the Turple Wilson case, the wolf, you know, guarding the chicken house. This was the place of the Hell's Angels, the People's Park, Raymond Procunier, and the prison violences. He was the prison chief who's now been sent to Virginia. We'll do more on him soon. The home of the SLA, the Altamont episode with the Hell's Angels, and the filming and killing of a person to link it to the hippie movement that literally ended the rock concerts as they were after Woodstock, the Altamont. This was an area in Oakland, a nest of the Ronald Reagan agent provocateurs, the police state killers, the kidnappers, the counterintelligence, the Operation Chaos, the messiest, dirtiest, and now this, and always Law and Order, John Mitchell and Richard Nixon, all these people, Mardian and all, Law and Order, right, Agnew, Law and Order, the hippies are terrible, the kids are awful. And these scumbags are with Meyer Lansky, Frank Sturgis, the gaming tables from Cuba, the syndicates, the narcotics dealers, the gun runners, the assassins. That is Mr. Maggiore. I'll come into details for you later on that. Bobby Inman, I want you to get an article. Playboy magazine this month, May 1982, has an article, The Smartest Spy. I'll do more on Inman. He retired this week. I don't think he retired because he doesn't like Casey. These guys are snakes living in the same pits for so long they wouldn't know how to dislike each other. I think he retired because the House Intelligence Committee is investigating at length the story of Edwin Wilson, Frank Turple, George Curcullah, and the deadly gang of assassins and dirty tricks supplying Gaddafi, the PLO, Idi Amin, Carlos, and so forth. I think he got out because he's too intelligent. He's the smartest guy in the service. He's the admiral that never got his foot in water. He's the brain behind a lot of this dirty stuff. And so he's getting out because the entire Nugan Hand trickery assassination team was his baby. And they talk in this article about Task Force 157, and they go on to say that the Task Force 157 was involved in about every dirty trick from 1968 to 1975, and that's a lot of dirty tricks. That takes you from Robert Kennedy, to Martin Luther King, and a whole slew of deaths and murders, and it mentions Allende, and as I say, these interconnecting counterintelligence operations have a head and a tail and a body, and Bobby Inman was certainly a big head of this thing, and he's too smart now to stay in it. He's going to get out. The ship is sinking. It's a mini sink with the House Intelligence Committee going into these people, but Kevin McCullough, he started blowing the whistle in 1975 on the operations of the CIA, and Frank Turple says they're still doing them today. So Bobby's getting out while he can, and he'll let somebody else take over. And as I say, who's taking over? The Senate has to approve of Mr. McMahon, M-C-M-A-H-O-N, John McMahon. But if they approve of him, they'll be approving of the counterintelligence covert agent, a career officer, worked in the CIA in every part of it, the technical projects, the administration, the deputy director of operations in charge of clandestine, which has to do then with the heroin dealing and the cocaine and the assassination teams and so forth. Another good article in Penthouse this month that I'll do more on, and for those of you that don't want to buy or support those magazines or can't get them, it's on the American Cancer Society. This is May 82. And how Elmer Bobbs, the godfather of Richard Nixon, the head of a huge chemical company, the fellow who gave the dummy front to Otto von Bollschwang, that notorious Nazi from Sunnyvale, Elmer Bobbs, and various multinational corporations took over the American Cancer Society and politicized it, pushing out the doctors and scientists. And it goes into the hanky-panky of how these various people take over, whether it's a disease like cancer or many other charities like the Red Cross or Boy Scouts. They get infiltrated with agents that bring their rottenness to them, and then the agencies collect funds with the legend of what they were when they first began, just as the Peace Corps. John Kennedy began that, and then it was infiltrated with CIA agents, and then it begins to lose its meaning, and people mistrust it. The American Cancer Society was taken over by these people. It's in the May Playboy 1982. Now, the covert action has a marvelous issue. I don't know how many of you take it, but if you don't take it, I'll give you the address. It's P.O. Box 50272, Washington, D.C., 20004. Covert action, filled with good information. It's $250 for the issue. If the address went too fast, call me and I'll give it to you. Send them $250 just for one issue and subscribe. They have a section this month on the seashell invasion. That involves the trying to take over that island with a CIA agent who worked with Richard Allen in the Portugal operations and with our CIA. The war in Angola, which also involves Jonestown, the Richard Mellon scapes, and the struggle for the control of Angola as a base, the Mozambique rebels, Argentina's death squads, Green Beret torture, the white paper on El Salvador, CIA media operations, the Klan coup attempt in Dominica that has to do with John Connolly's name that was hushed up, a major investor who was murdered, the Nazis from Canada, the Klan in this country uniting, trying to take Dominica for a place for printing swastikas, Nazi flags, drug, narcotic sales, and suggestion that it be a home base for Robert Fesco, who's floating around. And then they have a section on the Nugenhan Bank, five pages on the CIA bank. So this one issue has areas that I have briefly covered some at length on the Nugenhan, the Dominica, the Seychelles, the Argentine death squads, Angola, and the El Salvadorian paper and the Green Berets. It's a marvelous issue. It's the covert action, again, P.O. Box 50272, Washington, D.C., 20004. Now, I will take each one of these chapters or sections and analyze it in context with its own other related articles, but in the meantime, it would be nice for you to get that. And any of you saw NBC News this week, it was last Monday, I had just finished my broadcast here at KLRB on Sunday. Our NBC News comes at Channel 4 at 5:30, and I was watching it here in Carmel. And there on NBC were Germans in Germany and pictures of atomic weapon plants that were dismantled in Germany when World War II was over and reproduced down in Argentina. And they said on NBC News that a Walter Schnurr, S-C-H-N-U-R-R, a leading German scientist, fled to South America in 1946, used false documents, and went down to Argentina, and the intent they had was to make it a second fatherland to continue World War II, which was Admiral Byrd said they would do, and it make ready for World War III. And this article is about how Germany has sent enough material, raw material, and expertise to Argentina so the Germans will have the atomic bomb. They will be able to make 8 or 9 of them. They have 20 tons of nuclear fuel or even 10 bombs a year. By next year, Argentina will have that many bombs, and I wouldn't be surprised if they have them already when they're making this little provocation if they might not pull out one of those or wait till Great Britain does something like that and then they pull out their bombs. They've always refused to sign the non-proliferation treaty, as has South Africa, and America's been sending uranium down there. So the little chickens are going to come home to roost, and we're playing headbanger. We got our head between their legs. They're holding us by our ankles, and when is it going to fall? Who knows? Getting back to Cardinal Cody, we got about two more minutes. Cardinal Cody quits this planet Earth. He's gone. There's a good article about him, mentioning him in the Wall Street Journal, April the 20th, 1982. It's a story about Anthony Greeley, who writes these very successful books such as The Cardinal Sin, Thy Brother's Wife. He hates the way the Roman Catholic Church is going. He's had a battle with Cardinal Cody, and he calls him a madcap tyrant. He abuses his authority. He's manipulating people. As I say, Greeley wrote the book Cardinal Sins. And the Wall Street Journal has a good story about the $1 million in church funds that went to Cody's kissing cousin, Helen Dolan Wilson, alleged step-cousin down in Florida. I think the money went more to the organized crime syndicate coming out of Chicago with Paul Mesinkas, the Secretary of the Vatican, and the St. Michael Sindona money and the Carlo Gambino. I think Cody was a front from Chicago down to Florida for the narcotics traffic, and the money taken out of the church was maybe for blackmail or payment for allowing a lot of the hanky-panky that went on between the Vatican and Chicago to continue, and that was his payment. He got caught in the scandal, and then as soon as he got caught, he had four or five heart attacks, and then he decided to leave, and he croaked last night, and I guess nobody in Chicago is going to worry too much about that one. He's going to save a lot of embarrassment. And speaking about embarrassment, a final thing, little Barbara Walters, she always picks the greatest people to interview. She had Klaus von Bülow on this week, and she asked him about his grieving for his wife, who's still in the coma, and he comes out so clean. Well, we want to read about von Bülow. The New York Post, April 2nd, 1982, talks about his role with the Profumo affair in Great Britain. That was a scandalous Prime Minister Harold Macmillan's administration. John Profumo was in the cabinet and had to resign. And a Dr. Stephen Ward, who was involved in that, died quickly. And there's a suggestion that maybe von Bülow had a role in his demise at that time. And there's another article in Globe this week, April 27th, The Exotic Sex Life of von Bülow. And it tells about the whips and chains and the chambers of horror and the sins, all the instruments, sexual instruments, perversions and so forth, and von Bülow's role not only with Dr. Ward and the Profumo affair, but he was a very close friend of Lord Lucan, who vanished in 1974, the night that his child's governess was murdered. The story was that he thought his wife was coming and killed the woman. It turned out to be the governess, not the wife, and he fled to Australia. I believe that Lord Lucan is still alive, and I think he's a relative of Lady Di. If I'm not mistaken, I'll look that up. But this is on the exotic sex life. Now, his sad story was, I had to have a mistress because my wife wouldn't go to bed with me since 1972. He didn't tell Barbara Walters. Maybe his wife doesn't like the chains and the middle-aged tortures and the racks and the whips. Maybe she just wanted regular sex. And old kinky von Bülow has a whole closet full of tricks, and maybe she didn't like him very much. Well, anyway, that's it for tonight. We had so much to do and even more. But I'll have to cut it short now because this hour is up, and it is an hour later than usual. You take care of yourselves, and I'll be back next week with some more fun and games and the headbangers for all of us. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.
This is for all you headbangers out there.
KLRB.